Good afternoon, members. Just some introductions for newcomers, because we've got apologies from...
I've got apologies from Councillors Darrell Pratt and Mrs Elliott.
And who is subbing for who?
We have got Councillor Bamford is subbing for Councillor Pratt, I think.
Yes.
And Councillor Bass is subbing for Councillor Durham.
Thank you. And some introductions for the new people. We've got Andrew Barnes from BDO, Gurpreet
Greg.
From
Greg.
Big Barnes, and Debbie Hansen from EY, and our new interim director of resources, Kamal Mehta. Okay, you got everybody? There'll be questions afterwards. Right, apologies. Minutes of the last meeting. Oh, I've got to do chairman's notices. Please notice the notices on page 4. The meeting is being recorded. Fire leave by the green exits. Health and safety, beware of different levels in the chamber. I don't think the CCTV is on, is it? Because the red light isn't on. Right, so smile, you're on CTV. Right, minutes of the last meeting.
Agreed.
Yes, agreed. Notice the last meeting took 38 minutes. So that's your target.
just one comment on item 448. It's update some external law that Ernst & Young... Oh, sorry. For some reason, I misread that as internal audit. My eyes must be doing peculiar. Sorry.
Is it a query?
Yeah, sorry.
Right. Okay then. Right. Disclosures of interest, pecuniary and non-pecuniary or otherwise, none. Quarterly review of corporate risk agenda item 5. That's. Wow, isn't it?
Yes.
Right. Okay. Away you go.
Thank you, Chairman. This is the quarterly review of the corporate risks that we present to committees, and the risks are attached to the report, and the comments are in the last column of the report, or in the attachments, against each risk of what mitigation actions are being taken and what are the current state of affairs with those actions. I'm here to answer any specific questions that members may have. I will have to take some of the detailed questions back to the officers who are responsible for those risks, but I shall try my best to answer them here if I can. Thank you.
So we're asked to our views, comments and questions. Have we any? All of them are no change and one has gone down. Which page is that on, Councillor Hurd?
Well, Chairman, mine is a general comment, actually, which is echoing exactly what you said. There is no change out of the 17 of them.
Yeah.
No change and one has gone down, which is not... We should always be seeking improvement, surely. So what I wanted to know is, has there been any improvement anywhere? It appears not. If not, why not?
My comment would be most of them are pretty low to start with. But, for example, number 6, failure to deliver required infrastructure support to development arising from the LDP. Uncertainty regarding strategic ownership of floodings are 12. Probably not been much change on that, but after last night's meeting we might have more of a handle on it. Yes?
Chairman, if it helps, I mean, in terms of the direction of score staying the same or the score going down because of the actions, in a way is positive. What you don't want to do is that the score going up and the risk increasing. Some of these mitigation actions are holding actions where we are dependent on other partners to be involved in what we are doing, and so long as the actions of engaging with partners is being undertaken, we are holding the risk in terms of at the same level rather than partners disengaging with us. So those sort of risks, to hold them at the same level is in itself, by taking the actions, is in itself positive. The important thing is not to ensure that the risks do not increase in their scores. The other part of it is that, Chairman, you mentioned the flood issues. There has been a number of reports that are being taken to the Planning and Licensing Committee in the last cycle, just finished, and the Community Services Committee for the risk alleviation schemes and how grant funding can be brought into the district from the county level to implement risk flood alleviation schemes in the district. And members have given good consideration to those reports. So in terms of the work, there is mitigation actions being taken in terms of the officers working towards managing these risks. However, some of these risks are of a long nature in terms of coming to fruition of the actions that we are taking. So they may not move for a while, but doesn't mean that nothing is being done about them. It is that engagement is taking place. For example, as you mentioned yesterday, the council agreed the application, which has a large flood alleviation scheme within it, that will add to mitigating circumstances that we are undertaking. So, Chairman, that's the comment I would make. Thank you.
Council Fluker.
Thank you, Chairman. Page 17, list number 12, which is the failure to resource overall transformation programme. I'm surprised that risk has actually stayed where it is, because Mr. Meeter might be at a slight disadvantage, but I'm sure the other members will remember that the subject of the transformation board has been brought up for council, and in particular why it hasn't met for 9 months. And I really do think, Chairman, that from an audit point of view, I think it's very important that it does meet. Transformation is very important to this council, but as I say, for some unknown reason, the board hasn't met for that length of time, perhaps longer. I don't think it's met during this administration. And I hope that the interim director of resources will take on board my comments, perhaps review the risk, and try and call a meeting of the board, because in the past it's done some enormously good work. And I just don't understand, bearing in mind the size of its budget, why it doesn't meet. I think I've made my point, Chairman, and I think I know the answer.
All right. Chairman, Councillor Fluker is quite right that I am at somewhat of a disadvantage in terms of the historic history behind this. But I can report to the committee today that the corporate leadership team, myself, my fellow director and the chief executive, are meeting later on to develop the process by which we can develop the transformation program, so that we can then come to members and bring the transformation board together to actually develop the plans that we need to go through towards the program of works that will give us some certainty of how the council will work in the future. The work is in its embryonic stage at the moment, and what the corporate leadership team would like to do is actually develop it well enough so that it can be presented to members as part of the transformation board, and that is the current thinking at CLT level.
Mm. Supplementary.
Yes, supplementary. Then I'll be brief. Again, you are slightly disadvantaged, I know, but there is a transformation board, the membership of which was agreed by council. There are member representatives on there too. The rest of the team is a selection of first tier managers and directors, but that's what concerns me because that hasn't met. Yes. And I feel as though perhaps if we go the other way we might miss that tier, but I'll leave it with you to catch up.
Yes.
Councillor Joseph.
Chairman, before we leave this, I'm in item 08 on page 15. The flooding has been mentioned in relation to the North Haybridge Garden Turbo. I don't think we ought to forget that the agency's part of the deal is to demain the existing watercourses, so that in a sense this authority will be more responsible for some of the watercourses than they were before, and that needs to be picked up and managed.
Yes. Thank you. Any more comments? Agreed a recommendation? Oh, sorry, Councillor Bass.
I was looking at 03 on page 12, and that is something that we are, as members, are continually harping on about. And I read the comments, but I'm just wondering whether this is progressing at all, and whether or not the risk score should be increased, because as time goes on, the likelihood of achieving what we're trying to achieve is not going to happen. We need to engage. It says we need to engage with the smaller providers. I don't think we do. I think we need to engage with the larger providers, as was evident last night. So I would at least query that as to whether or not, and I appreciate it's a relatively new RIP, one onto the register. And the other one about the following one also, I would highlight the changes to police priorities. And we on the Overview Scrutiny Committee, meetings of crime disorder, know that the figures that the police are coming up with now will never satisfy this perception of crime, because the detection rate is falling and the incident rates are going up.
Mm-hmm.
And there again, I think that perhaps should be looked at, because I think the risk of that is going up, certainly not coming down. Despite the Police and Crime Commissioner's reassurance, there doesn't seem to be any evidence of that happening. So I would suggest that perhaps those two are looking at. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Do you want to take that forward to the risk owner, or are you going to give an answer?
No, Chairman, I'll take on board the points. They will be duly minuted, and I will be taking that back to the owner, Director of Customer and Community. Thank you.
Hey, Councillor Bamford.
Mr. Chairman, obviously I'm not a member of this committee normally, so I just wanted to ask, on the basis that this planning application was agreed last night, does that then amend the risk straight away, or does it wait until the work actually starts on something like the flood alleviation scheme? Or is it just based on the fact that the planning application has been accepted?
Chairman, through you, this sort of consideration will have to be put into the overall mix of all of the flood risk issues that are currently pertinent within the district. And although it is a large scheme and it's going to alleviate a large area from flooding, there will be other schemes in there, and within that we'll have to look at how this risk profile will be affected. So yes, what I would say is that the risk profile itself will need to be looked at in the light of. Now the question whether it is when actually works are started, or when the works are completed, or the comfort of knowing that the application includes that, and it is a detailed scheme already, I think we'd have to take that back to the risk owner to ask them to consider that particular risk in the light of that.
If it was me, I'd wait until it's completed. It's like enforcement. You don't knock it off the list until it's actually been done. All right. Any more questions? Accept the recommendations? Agree, thank you. Agenda item 6, which is external order appointment, new arrangements.
Thank you. Through you, Chairman. The report is quite straightforward in the sense that after the Audit Commission was abolished in 1st of April 2015, there were interim arrangements put in place for the continuance of the audit contracts that were already in place. This is for external audit contracts. And now the time has come where the local government association set up a company to manage those contracts, and the Secretary of State had given them the authority to do so. The time has come to refresh and appoint the external auditors. The new Act, the Accounts and Accountability and Audit Act, requires local authorities to undertake and appoint their own auditors in their own right and not through an intermediary. However, authorities can collectively get together and appoint auditors and go through a procurement process, or the PSAA, which is the company set up by the local government association, has been given the appointing officer, the appointing authority from the Secretary of State, and we can go through those. Most of the authorities in Essex are opting to go and have their auditors appointed through PSAA on the basis that the procurement process is quite, for small authorities like ours, would be quite involved, quite costly, and quite time-consuming, whereas the PSAA will undertake all the procurements, and then we would have the choice of a number of companies that we would have for our external audit. Now, BGO are our internal audit currently, so they would be not eligible to undertake external audit work for this council because there would be a conflict of interest. So they would not be part of the companies that would be presented to us if in before December 31st of December 2017, by which time we would have to have made the appointments. So the recommendation here, Chairman, is option 3 as set out in paragraphs 3.4 and 4.3 of the report. Certainly 4.3 is the option itself, and it would be a recommendation to Council because it is Council that makes the final decision on this, and although the Audit Committee's recommendation would be put to Council. Thank you.
Councillor Fuca.
Yeah, very briefly, Chairman. I mean, 3.8.1, I think the words in there are the words of wisdom, and I think that the conclusion it draws in 4.2, I think, leaves me to propose that we go with option 3 and the officer's recommendation, Chairman.
All right, yes. Councillor Bamford.
Sorry, Mr. Chairman. It doesn't say anything about a charge by this independent organisation that's been set up by the LGA. Is there a charge of any kind?
There is no charge because the fees that we are finally paying, we would be paying for the external audit, will include a level of administration that the PSAA undertake. It is a service and a non-profit making organization that the LGA have set up for the benefit of procurement, knowing that authorities might find it difficult to engage and the market on a single basis, especially an authority like Maldon would be, you know, it's a small authority. Therefore, the bulk, not the bulk, but a large procurement exercise might give economies of scale to the authorities, but also allow PSAA to meet their costs as well. Thank you.
All right. Agree to recommendation for option 3? Thank you. Right. Agenda item 7, external audit, annual audit letter. Debbie.
Thank you, Chair. This is the annual letter that we're required to issue to you each year following the conclusion of our audit. It largely repeats the messages which have been previously reported to this committee in our audit results report, which was brought to this 1st of September meeting. Obviously, at that date, the audit wasn't fully complete, and we did issue an updated audit results report to the Director of Finance on the 30th of September before we issued the audit opinion and final report. The format of the annual audit letter is slightly different to the audit results report because it's targeted at an external audience rather than the internal. The audit results report is very much intended for this committee as those charged with governance. And the aim of the annual letter is that this is something you put on your website that's available to members of the public to read, which gives them a high-level overview of the findings from the external auditor's work for the year. I therefore wasn't going to go through the report in detail. I think it's a positive report. It highlights that we issued our audit opinion, which was unqualified on the financial statements by the deadline, along with an unqualified value for money conclusion. There were no other significant issues that we reported. We've highlighted within this report the responsibilities of the council and the auditor. We've also highlighted the main risks that we identified at planning stage in relation to our opinion on the accounts and the value for money conclusion, and then the work that we've undertaken to address those risks and the conclusions reached, which in all cases were that we were satisfied that the council's arrangements for the accounts were adequate, as were its arrangements for ensuring value for money and the use of resources. There is one new section within the letter, which is just at the very end, which talks about focus on your future and really just highlights the EU referendum as an area for all councils to be keeping their eye on in terms of potential impacts that it could have on, for example, your investments and pension funds, but also more broadly on the economy, levels of growth, levels of inflation, etc., and to be minded to the potential impact of that on the council. I therefore wasn't going to say anything more about the letter. As I say, I think it's a positive letter, which reflects that the audit was, from our perspective, a good audit. I think one of the challenges we haven't referred to in there, but we will need to be addressing next year, is the earlier close-down timetable, which hits in 2 years' time. And we'll obviously be working with the finance team to try to prepare for that this year. Obviously, last year was our first audit as EY, as the auditors of Maldon. Very happy to take any questions on anything within the letter.
I think a lot of credit getting this all signed up by the 30th of September goes to the former Director of Resources. There was an awful lot of rushing around on the 30th of September to get it all signed up. And last, so there a lot of credit goes to Carl to get it all, and yourselves, of course, to get it all done on the date. And now we've got all our accounts all properly signed up, which is probably the first time for quite a few years, actually. Because we've always had something hanging in there that hadn't been resolved, but we've now the new interim director of resources inherits an ongoing ship with no skeletons in the cupboard. Any questions? Agree the recommendation to receive the report. Thank you. Number 8.
This is our sector briefing. We brought, I think, our quarter 3 one for the last audit committee in September, and this is our quarter 4 update. What I'd like to do is really just take you to the key questions, which are on page 60 of your reporting pack. And that just highlights really the main issues that we've included in the sector update and what you might like to think about as the audit committee. The first of those I think we've briefly referred to, which is the what actions the council has taken in response to the EU referendum, and the issues that we highlight from the EY Item Club are around the predictions of slowing in growth and potential increased inflation next year. I know some councils receive direct EU funding and they've been potentially impacted as well by risks around some of that funding going in future. So different councils are impacted in different ways by this, but it's something to keep your eye on. The next one is something that mainly impacts on health bodies. So it's sustainability and transformation plans, but I think by their name they are area-wide plans which involve not only the health bodies but also the local government bodies within a particular geographical area. So that's really just flagging that, is Maldon engaged in that to the extent that it needs to be, and if so, have you considered any sort of governance implications? I don't know the answer to that question at the moment. I don't know how engaged Maldon is as a district council within Essex, and obviously within Essex you've also got something called the success regime which is in place for the health economy in the local area, and so it's a slightly more complicated picture I think within the Essex area than some of the geographical areas, but that may be something the committee might just want to get an update on in terms of whether you are engaged in that process and whether there is anything you need to be aware of. There's also some changes coming in terms of exit packages with some caps on public sector exit packages at £95,000. From the accounts last year, I don't recall there being any significant exit packages in Maldon, but again, that's just something that councils need to be aware of. The next item that we've highlighted, because this is a generic local government briefing, is really for county councils and those administering pension funds, so it's not relevant to Maldon particularly. And the next one is also where councils had Lobos, and again, from the audit of the accounts last year, we're certainly not aware of Maldon being in that situation, but we do have some audit clients that are and are dealing with that at the moment. The next item was about arrangements to appoint external auditor, and I think you covered that in the previous item, so obviously that's in hand. And then I think the last two, really, the first one of those is talking about governance culture and practical considerations for boards and audit committees. It's a piece of work that EY has done looking at culture of organisations, very much based on our corporate client base rather than our public sector client base. But I think it does have some interesting themes to think about, such as political architecture and social architecture, and how that might influence how an organisation operates, both at board level but also for the audit committee. There is a link within the document to more detail on that paper, so members of the committee may just find it of interest to look at, to consider how you operate within Maldon and how some of those things might influence the way you operate your governance. And then finally is just a highlight of something that's on the horizon in terms of potential enhanced reporting about gender pay gap reports. It's not included in requirements at the moment, but I think it's something that's likely to come, so it's making sure that you're maybe already capturing that data and considering that in advance of formally including that in your published reports. Very happy again to any questions or comments on the paper.
Any questions? Right, we're asked to note the briefing. Is that noted? Thank you. Agenda item 9, progress against the internal audit plan. Mr. Barr. Oh, no.
I'm going to kick off this one, that's all right. I'll talk to the progress report, and then Andrew is going to cover the follow-up of recommendations. So if you turn to page 68, which just sets out our progress since the last Audit Commission meeting, we've produced three reports, and there's summaries of those reports, and I'm going to talk briefly to those. Our programme, you might remember, was quite backloaded. We'd agreed a number of changes to the plan with the previous Director of Resources. So there's a lot of work going on now, and at the next meeting you'll be seeing quite a few more reports. We're still confident that we're going to have finished everything by the end of the year. But obviously there's a lot of activity going on at the moment. If I just then turn to the summaries of the reports. So the first of those is on page 74. So this looked at cybercrime and how well protected you are against attacks to your electronic systems. Overall, we thought the arrangements were quite good, actually. We've given a moderate opinion, which is our version of satisfactory or adequate, if you like, on both the design of the controls and the effectiveness. You've got some effective antivirus software that's working and it's being kept up to date. And the other thing that's very encouraging is you are actually testing your systems to see whether that software and your protections are working. That puts you ahead, actually, of a lot of local authorities that we work with. So that was good news. In terms of things you need to do, in particular, it's about having a comprehensive record of your information assets. So what do you need to protect? You should be ensuring you've got a full record of that and that it's prioritised. There are various things that you need to update, like your risk assessment around cyber security and your policies and procedures. And you've had some restructuring, obviously, over recent months and years, and that you need to update your processes to reflect that. But we had a full action plan. We've agreed that with management, and I think a positive way forward on that. And as I say, on the whole, it was reasonably well controlled. If I turn to the next one, which is page 75, this is the income generation report that one of our advisors produced. I believe it's generated some interest locally. Just to put this in context, this was very much about our advisory team, who work with a number of local authorities in this sort of area, to come up with some ideas and to help you prioritise some ideas around income generation. We did not make any concrete recommendations about what you should do. It's very much for officers to develop those ideas and for obviously you as members to decide whether you want to take them forward or not. But clearly there were some suggestions in there that could generate a reasonable amount of money and that have been used by other local authorities successfully. So those are there for you to consider. And as I say, that is really up to officers to take forward and decide whether they want to produce more detailed information to support taking that forward. The final report is on page 77. And again, this was a moderate assurance report. And this was about your planning services improvement plan. And again, I think there's a number of good improvements have been made. The improvement plan you've got is being actioned. There's a number of positive things that have been done. We are seeing some improvements as a result of that. But there are still things that you could still do. So in particular, we're looking for what we call SMART objectives, more specific measurable objectives around the improvement plan, so you can really quantify whether it is making a difference or not. And perhaps take things forward by having more benchmarking against other councils and by utilising your software system for planning more, so that you get more efficiencies out of it. So there are a few ideas there, I think, for you to take forward. And again, we've got a good action plan. We've agreed with officers to do that. That's all I was going to say on the progress report, but happy to take any questions.
Councillor Hurd.
Thank you, Chairman. The ones that have already been undertaken, flooding, cybercrime and data protection, how were they chosen, please? Because I see over the page that there are things like planning services and workforce management, and those are areas of concern in the overview and scrutiny committee. But I'm not sure cybercrime or data protection was. So how are they chosen, please?
Well, obviously, we had a full planning process to decide the audit plan, and I do believe this committee was involved in that. I seem to remember coming to a meeting where we talked about the subjects that were going to be part of the plan. We arrived at that through looking at your own risk assessment of issues that are of interest to the council, by talking to officers and seeing what their priorities were, looking at what previous audits had been done as well. So obviously we don't want to look at something when we've already looked at it last year or it has been looked at and there's already actions happening. So there's a sort of a process that goes on. We will be kicking off the process for next year's plan for the February meeting, actually, and there will be a draft plan coming to that meeting. So there is a process there. Members had the chance to input at that stage and we agreed the plan, and that's what we've been implementing.
Yes. Supplementary then, if I may.
Yeah.
Chairman, the comment that you made there is that you've spoken and those are the ones that are of a concern to officers, but some of these things are of a concern to the members, and of course it's the members that are representing the public.
Yeah.
But I don't think there's actually...
We did get, it did come to committee, a list of
priorities.
Project and priorities.
Okay.
It was about 6 months ago?
Yeah, it would be about two or three audit committees.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because I know cybercrime was selected because, in a way, it had been put off for a number of years because we didn't have in-house expertise to do an audit on cybercrime. And whilst I'm talking about that, I was quite surprised that the council's firewall wasn't up to scratch, but you're the experts, not me, but I've tried to get through it and I couldn't ever get through it.
Okay, thank you, Chairman. I think obviously my memory patch must have faded on that one, but thank you. But just on going on to page 75 as well, it speaks about the work that you do, and again you said that it's up to officers to generate those ideas. What is the payoff for them? Because it would be very easy to say yes, thank you very much, but I've got enough to do at the moment. So how is that encouraged for officers to generate these other ideas of income generation, please?
Well, that might be one for Kamal to speak to, but basically, as you know, the council has a very challenging financial position. It has, to reach a balanced budget, you've got to make a number of difficult decisions, and I think the payoff is that, you know, this can help you balance that budget. Obviously, you need to decide between income generation, but also efficiencies and reducing services in some areas may be necessary. So, obviously, if you can increase your income, it will help offset some painful decisions you might have to make otherwise about reducing services. So that's hopefully the encouragement there.
And sorry, Chairman, one other supplementary in a minute. So do you have assurance then that these findings are shared with other managers at your meetings?
They're already on the agenda of community services.
Yes, Chairman, in terms of to answer Councillor Hurd's question about how is it disseminated within the office structure.
Yes.
Certainly the directors and the corporate leadership team have discussed these with managers, and as part of the budget seminar work that was done by my predecessor, some of these items did actually end up on that list of making additional income, generating additional income, which for example the increased garden waste prices has been actually taken on board. And there is an item in the income generation part of the budget which has already been approved by finance, by community services committee, as well as finance and corporate services committee, and it'll feed into the budget process, and it'll be identified as part of the budget, the increased prices into the fees and charges as well. So it does permeate through down with the managers. And the first thing is the question is this a workable, you know, I mean, this exercise has been done by BDO with regard to these are the potential areas you can increase your income by generating additional income or introducing new charges. And the process we would go through at officer level is saying how viable is it, because we are the closest to the community in that way with members, and how would it be received, would it generate any income, or would it generate enough income to offset the cost of collection and the like. So we'd go through all those discussions and then put it to members as an item once that sort of discussion had taken place. So it's the viability of being able to achieve that as well.
Right, thank you, Chair. So the reason that I ask that question is that it leads me to another one, which is on here about leasing additional office space within council building. Now, we know that it's in the public domain that the police are thinking of coming to these council offices. But with this income generation obviously comes more risk, and that risk would be if you have police officers here, for example, the associated risks with that is that there's going to be more emergency traffic going up and down the roads, that there are still school children going up and down this road, there are patients, etc. So how is this associated with the risks, and do we as councillors have some kind of say about this additional office space being leased when it's increasing the risk to this authority?
That's operational, isn't it?
Yes, thank you, Chairman. In terms of the risk, this has been gone through by the Finance and Corporate Services Committee in terms of the remit under the terms of the reference of the committee, Finance and Corporate Services Committee, the management of assets and leases of over £10,000 or over 7 years are to be put to Finance and Corporate Services Committee, which officers did. The Finance and Corporate Services Committee agreed that the space could be leased to the police service. It was the police service that actually came to the council to say, would you be able to provide us with accommodation and be able to provide a secure accommodation as well. The situation is that the police service relocating here will not have any holding facilities in terms of holding anybody in custody.
and therefore that particular part of the risk is not present, that there would be anybody not present on premises that are being held in custody. The other, that the Director of Community Services has been discussing with the police regarding the emergency movements of vehicles and the police services methodology and working practices in the operational working practices in this respect, and the instructions that are given to the drivers. So it is actually been addressed in terms of risk management part of it, of how the surrounding area and the access in and out of the council offices is managed in risk terms. So that's what I would say, Chairman.
Well, I'm grateful for that answer, but I'm not sure it answered my question. Will members be able to take a vote on whether this happens or not?
Chairman, point of order, because, you know, we're straying off now into matters that will normally be dealt with by
Finance and Corporate Services,
by the programme committees. And really and truly, what we're doing here really is we're not drilling into the detail, but we're identifying the areas where VDO say that we need to look at. This is what this is all about. You know, I agree with Councillor Hurd's concerns, but I really don't think that they are.
We shouldn't. It's already been agreed by Finance and Corporate Services.
So
anyway,
this is an overview, but I would, Chairman, if you allow me, I'll just put Councillor Hurd back in his comfort zone.
And Council.
So I'd hate to miss a gem while you were talking. I'd just like to put Councillor Hurd back in his comfort zone, and I'm sure that, like him, we both look forward to February when we can have some input into this plan, and then we can see the outcomes. But I think, Chairman, as it stands, you know, this was agreed, I think, by the previous or the members of the last audit committee, and I think we should agree the recommendation, really, because it's not for us to discuss the details, subject to Councillor Bamford.
Councillor Bamford?
It's just a question, really. On page 76, you've got a list which you've highlighted in green, red or amber. I just wondered how you assess that. Was it in conjunction with the officers? My main reason for asking is I don't understand why increasing pre-application planning fee charges is red.
There was a set of criteria we agreed with the council that we would use to evaluate those, and they included a number of things, including sort of the practicalities of doing it, the amount of money it would raise, the sort of reputational impact on the council. So I don't remember the exact scoring for that particular one, but it was against set criteria, and that was agreed with officers, so they've accepted that evaluation.
I think the theory went something like this: that if you increase the fees too much, it would put people off having the service. So there is a fine balance between charging what's reasonable and a market rate and overdoing it and putting people off and therefore generating less income because you put the price up too much. It's the law of diminishing returns, I think. All right. Any more questions on that report, or Councillor Hurd?
Yeah, I'm sorry, Chairman, I'm not in my comfort zone. but perhaps I'll rephrase the question then. I'm on page 75, and again, this is about leasing office space within the council building, so I will simply ask, whilst it does generate income, is the risk being viewed as well?
Well, we have to review the risk of all operations, including this one.
Yes, I would say, Chairman, the Director of Community Services is addressing the risks, risk issues raised, yes.
Thank you. Right, we've been asked to note the recommendation to note the progress report. Is that agreed? Right. Number 10, internal audit, follow-up and recommendations. Who's doing that one?
That's me. Thank you, Chair.
Mr. Valens.
Members of the committee will recall that BDO were appointed as the internal auditors to the council from the early part of 2016. And as part of that, we agreed to implement or to complete the work on the 2015-16 financial year for the audit plan. So now at this point, having completed that work in the early part of this year, a number of recommendations were made as a result of the work that was undertaken. And now at this point, we're starting to follow up the recommendations that were made back then to make sure that the agreed actions that will be taken by officers are indeed being actioned, and that the recommendations as agreed are being implemented. So this report really is just to feed back to the committee the progress that officers are making implementing those recommendations. And as you can see from the chart on page 82, effectively a quarter of the recommendations have been implemented and agreed and completed by officers as was agreed. A quarter are currently in progress, with officers having taken some action but not having fully implemented the recommendations that were agreed. Nearly half aren't yet due, as at the point of doing our follow-up work in October, looking at the progress with recommendations, and only one isn't yet complete, which was something that was agreed that would be done that hasn't yet been done. Just like to focus on that particular recommendation, which is on page 90 of your packs. This is in respect of supporting evidence to justify why finance officers have put journals through the financial management system. And there are a number of instances where the supporting evidence to justify that wasn't actually in place, as had been agreed that it would be recorded and filed with the journal. So I've agreed with the Interim Director of Resources, and I know that you've currently got a finance manager post-vacant. So that's something that we're going to pick up with the new finance manager when they arrive in the new calendar year. But all the other recommendations are either complete or in progress. I'm happy to take any questions that members may have on this report.
Anybody got any comments on the report? Councillor Fluker.
Just one, that I think the internal auditor should be aware of, and that's on page 83, Constitution in Terms of Reference. Chairman Thieu, I think the internal auditor is aware that we are trying to get as many documents now onto our internal iDrive, and the importance of making sure that these documents actually reflect what's been agreed, because we've had a very difficult situation lately where our black book, where all of our governance and terms of reference are contained, does not reflect the information that's available electronically. And that is a massive risk, and I hope that through your work you'll pick up on this and you'll be able to deal with the problems. Thank you, Chairman.
All right. I wasn't aware that there was a mismatch between the black book and what's on the iDrive. Is that what the issue is?
I'd refer you to the Deputy Monitoring Officer's email to all members, which dealt with the Pacific area, which certainly highlighted the shortcomings of what's going on. Thank you.
All right. Yes.
Chairman, with regard to that, I'll take that back to the monitoring officer and the head of legal services in terms of ensuring that paper documents are also updated to the same extent as the electronically held documents, and therefore they should be the same. Although over a period of time, hopefully we don't have to have a black book and just use the electronic documents. That's where we want to get to eventually, and it shouldn't take that long to get to that, I would hope. With regard to the item that Andrew, Mr. Barnes has identified with regard to the supporting journals, record supporting journals, that item that has not been actioned at the time this report was written and undertaken. Can I just say that since I arrived and when the draft papers came to me to have a look at in terms of this report, I picked up on that, and I've had a meeting with all the accountants in the absence of the finance manager. I manage the accountants directly now, and I've had a discussion with them, and I've asked them to make sure that all supporting documentation is
appended to the journals to support the journal, and they've all been given that instruction since my arrival. Thank you.
I think we should note that this is, once on the first time for a long while, we've been completely up to date with our internal audit plan, and it just goes to show that our decision to appoint external or outsource internal audit was the right move. Anyway, accept the report. Thank you. No other items of business. I close the meeting at 3:50.